Hi, this is WAER Music Director Eric Cohen, welcoming you to my first Jazz Journeys podcast of 2015, heard exclusively on WAER.org. You can also enjoy me weeknights on EC in the evening from 8 to 11 on 88.3 FM, with one exception, that being Thursday, when I follow Jazz Night in America at 9. Well, he's been called the premier organist of his generation. Born into a musical family in Pennsylvania that includes his father, Papa John, an outstanding organist in his own right. From David Sanborn and George Benson to Arturo Sandoval and Benny Golson, he's played with the best of the best, and he's still only 43. Enjoy my recent interview with the one and only Joey DeFrancesco, who starts off by talking about the experience of working with Jimmy Cobb and Larry Coryell and the historic Van Gelder Studios.
Well, you know, Jimmy is, and Larry, they're just two players I've had a chance to play with over the years a few times, and Jimmy was always somebody I dreamt of playing with since I was a kid. I just loved the way he grooved on all those great Miles records, you know? So we got it together, and then when we were going to make the record, I really wanted to make it a historical event. That's why we recorded at Rudy Van Gelder's, you know, because that was important too, because he's been recording all the great jazz records for forever. And with these two guys, two legendary musicians, I wanted to make everything correct. Mm. So we were in the studio, and we had a great time. You know, I picked all the material. Larry brought that one song that he wrote for me called Joey D.
Joey D, yeah.
But other than that, and I had one blues that we did on there.
Now, let me ask you this. I could be wrong on this. Is this the first, I mean, gosh, you've been, your first album came out when you were, 17?
17. Oh, actually, I recorded when I was 17. It came out when I was 18.
Came out when you were 18. My question is this, though. Is this the first time that you have recorded at Van Gelder?
Oh, no. I've recorded there a million times.
Okay. I knew it couldn't have been because, I mean, I wanted to just ask you personally being in that studio because, I mean, anytime I get a recording and it says recorded at Van Gelder Recording Studio in Englewood Cliffs, New Jersey, I can only imagine for a musician to be in that, you know, those hallowed halls. I mean, can you feel it in there, knowing the guys that have come before you that have recorded there?
Absolutely. And, you know, there's definitely that kind of vibe in there. And to think that, you know, even the instruments, that organ that I'm using there, that's the same organ that's been in there since 59. So all those great, you know, the Jimmy Smith back at the Chicken Shack, Organ Grinder Swing, as well as all the Prestige, Jack McDuff, Groove Holmes, Don Pett, that's that same organ. Huh. So, you know, the history just in that, all those cats made all their best records right there on that instrument. And that goes for all the other, you know, the drums, the pianos and things are things that were like on Trains records, you know, Love Supreme and all that.
But your career essentially goes back to when you were 6 years old, sitting in with your dad, and then of course I've heard the story and read the story about you with Don Patterson and Philly Joe Jones and Hank Mobley on Broad Street in Philly. I mean, do you? Never mind the time you spent with Miles, which is probably that's a whole nother interview for a whole nother time. But I mean, you're 41 years old. I mean, you still have, God willing, you haven't even lived half your life yet, and yet your career is already over three decades old. I mean, do you ever take time and just step back and say, man, I'm pretty lucky with what my life has become, and yet I'm still a young guy.
Yeah, I feel very, very, very fortunate. I think about it quite often, you know. I've been very fortunate. And I have so much work to do you know, and I've been doing it so long, but really it's not that long,
right.
I guess, you know, but I've always feel like I got to push forward and I got so much more to do and, you know, but yes, I definitely think about that a lot and I feel very fortunate.
This is a question I know you've been asked before, but if you don't mind answering it again, the first time that you got a chance to meet the man himself, Jimmy Smith, I understand that you were about, I believe it was 1978, and you were 7 at the time. Can you just relate that story as to where it was and what it was like when you first met Jimmy Smith?
Yeah, it was a club in inside the Sheraton Hotel in New York City. So we took the train, because I'm from Philly. We lived in Philly.
Sure.
So we took the train up there to see him. And it was the first time I seen him. And that's those old pictures of me and him. That was that night.
Yeah.
And, oh, man, I was just in awe. I couldn't believe, you know, Jimmy Smith was, that was as big as it got to me as a kid. I mean, that was, he was a huge celebrity. I couldn't believe it. And I was sitting on the bench with him, and I was so choked up I couldn't play anything, you know. But, yeah, it was amazing. And just over the years, I had kept in contact with him.
And, yep. And of course, you, for those people listening who don't know, you were the very last person that Jimmy Smith recorded with. You and Jimmy did an album called Legacy, which was finished up literally days before Jimmy passed in 2005. So I know that of all your records that you've done, I'm sure Legacy is one that really is very personal to you.
Yeah, absolutely. I was not aware at all that we did it in August of 2004.
Okay.
And, you know, I knew Jimmy was older and he was moving slower and he was a little frail, but I thought he was going to be around for a while, you know.
Yeah.
And we were doing some gigs together. We were doing a lot of stuff, and it was a lot of fun. And I was so excited when we made that record. In fact, the whole session, I hope someday it comes out, we videotaped everything.
Oh.
But it was so amazing, you know. And we hung out all the time. And he even lived here. You know, he lived in Arizona the latter part of his life. So
yeah,
spent a lot of time together.
Great. That's great.
And we made that record, and I'm very proud of that record, not only because of, you know, what it meant as being Jimmy's on it, and it was his last record, all those things, but it's just a great musical record. Totally different for him, too. I put him in elements that,
yeah,
you know, because the record companies kind of pigeonholed him, I felt. After a while, they just made the same record over and over and over and over again. So I want to, but he was so much more than that musically, and then you didn't. Have you ever seen him live? You knew that too.
Yeah.
So I put him in all these different situations, and he just let me control the whole thing, and he just played his butt off on everything. So.
What is it about Philly? I mean, you of course from Philly. I know your dad. Even though your dad's originally from
Niagara Falls,
you guys moved to the family moved to Philly in '67.
Right.
But when I think of Philly, I think of organists. I think of yourself. I think of Don Patterson. I think of Charles Erland. I mean,
Jimmy Smith too.
And Jimmy, yeah. I mean, what can you put your finger on? What it is about? Not to mention that there are a multitude of other great musicians, not organists, who are also from Philly. What is it about Philly and great players that come out of there?
Well, you know, a lot of music, but I think the whole organ craze, though, is definitely because the first person that really got everybody interested in the organ so much on that level was Jimmy Smith, and he was from a town called Norristown. It was like 3 miles from Philly. And out of that, it got really popular locally, so I think a lot of guys went that way because of that, and that's why it started in Philly, you know, it was harbored there. You know, Jimmy McGriff was from Philly, Charles Erland, Gru Holmes was from Camden, which was right across the bridge, you know, Shirley Scott.
Yeah.
Trudy Pitts.
Let me close with this. How would you assess the state of the Hammond B3 as we enter 2015? A lot of different organists out there, young organists who are trying out the instrument, trying to make a career of it. You get a chance to hear some of these guys across the country, and what's your assessment?
Yeah, no, I've gone around and heard, I hear them all. I mean, when I'm on the road, somebody's always telling me about somebody who's around, or they show up at gigs, and there's quite a few of them out there. There's a few that come to mind that I really think are exceptional. One of them is Pat Bianchi, who's he's actually from Rochester.
Oh.
And he's playing with Pat Martino right now. And there's one in Chicago I heard named Pete Benson, who I think is exceptional. And I have a little student that's 16. His name's Eric Kaplan.
Oh, boy.
From Kansas City, who can play, too. He's got a groove, you know.
Well, he's got a pretty good teacher. Jeez.
I guess.
Yeah.
You know, but these, you know, those are the guys that are really, there's a lot of guys that are kind of doing things, you know, very much like what was already done a million times, but I still love all that, too.
There's not going to be another Joey DeFrancesco, just like there's not going to be another Jimmy Smith. You obviously, you've got to be an individual. You've got to develop your own style. But nowadays, anybody can just go onto YouTube and type in Jack McDuff, or Groove Holmes, or Wild Bill Davis, or Shirley Scott, and within moments, they get a chance to, you know, to hear some of their recordings that have been uploaded onto the social media site. I mean, we're living in a time now where accessibility to the organists, both past and present, it's the accessibility has never been as widespread as it is right now. And would you agree that's a good thing, that people can kind of get a history lesson right on their own computer?
Well, it's good in some respects and not so good in other respects. But, you know, the type of publicity and things and accessibility it makes really is good to educate people to know what's going on. And you couldn't pay for the type of publicity that you get from that. Also, the awareness that it makes for people about different kinds of music and the players and things. On the other side, you make a record, it gets released, the next day you can get the whole thing for free.
That's the other side of the coin, right?
You know, so that doesn't make it easy for musicians, you know. But for the record companies, you know, things like that. But,
yep.
You know, but at the same time, jazz musicians really are live performers, and that's where they make their living.
Sure.
And I think seeing all those things on YouTube and things like that makes people want to come out and see even more.
World-class organist and the well-traveled Joey DeFrancesco joining me for this edition of Jazz Journeys. Joey's most recent recording was his very first holiday offering, a 2-CD set titled Home for the Holidays. He's performed here in Central New York on a number of occasions, and we can only hope that a return visit from Joey D will happen somewhere down the road. I'll be unearthing a variety of never-before-heard interviews with some of the biggest names in jazz in future podcasts. So stay tuned. It's going to be a fun year. To hear archived editions of Jazz Journeys, please visit WAER.org. Thanks again for listening, and don't forget, you can follow me on Twitter at Eric Cohen, WAER, as well as the station at WAER883, and be sure to give us a like on Facebook as well. Until next time, remember, jazz, only four letters, but infinite possibilities.